outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the Father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey. The God Journey.
Well, Kyle, these are sad days around the Jacobson household.
I heard they were. I heard they were darkened by the loss of a dear friend.
Grief walks these hallways, and Sarah and I are bathing in it. It's okay. We have a lot of grief. Zoe, our lab shepherd mix. No, lab retriever mix. There we go. passed away unexpectedly last Thursday. We'd gotten home from our trip. She'd had some health issues, nothing life-threatening, or so we thought. And then, man, in a day, she just had reached a point where we had to get her to the vet hospital, and there was nothing they could do to save her. And we have lost a big presence in our home, no doubt.
Yeah, she is an incredibly special and unique dog in that regard. I think there was something about her, you know, from having known her from a puppy and her being a much larger than expected golden retriever.
It was that lab part
that was mildly unexpected that impacted that a little bit. But gosh, she, even from early on, she was such a delight and just more attuned and present and caring than the average dog by far.
Even people who don't like dogs that were in our home would say, man, if I could have this dog, I would have a dog. Because she was just so in tune with people, situations. Whenever we had a group of people in our home, she would always be at the foot or the feet of the most hurting person in the room, whether that was physically or emotionally. She was drawn to pain and sought to soothe it. And for Sarah to have had this animal, this dog, for the last 9 years and all that we went through, it's been amazing to have had her. It's sad that we lost her so abruptly, so quickly. Didn't even have time. But the other dogs, we've always kind of failing health issues make that kind of a relief finally when they're gone. We didn't have that with Zoe. She here one day, walked 3 miles. The next day, we put her down. And
jeez.
Yeah, it's been very painful, especially for Sarah. She's lost a good buddy, her cookie dough making buddy. She said, it's going to be hard the next time I make cookie dough, because Zoe was right there, ready to taste it along with Sarah to see how good it was.
Well, does that mean that she's going to stop making cookies for you?
She says no.
Okay.
Mandy's going to have to sub here. Mandy's our new little retriever pup. And she really, it's amazing how she's already kind of fitting into the place where Zoe was. She's doing her best to hold Sarah's pain and to be with her and just sit quietly with her when she's going through it. And it's been a real delight to watch. So hopefully she'll fill in to some degree, but man, we always get a new dog when one dies. And this time Sarah's not in a hurry to get a dog if we're going to, and we may not, because we know there's no way to get another Zoe. There's just no way. She was special in every way and just such a great comfort to Sarah as she worked through her trauma. There are times when Sarah's would feel the tension and the PTSD coming on. She would just lay on Zoe's chest and just breathe with Zoe's heart and just breathe with her breath. And that would soothe her and calm her. Just amazing dog. She had her, she was going to take her into pediatric wards. We had her all trained to be a therapy dog and go in there. And then just as she was being certified, COVID hit and the program ended. And so I guess Zoe needed all that training because Sarah needed it.
Yeah.
So we're dealing with it. I think we'll get over it at some point. It's going to take a while. Best thing I heard this week was Sarah said yesterday, she said, she wants to move from grief over the void Zoe left to gratefulness for the gift she was, which is a good journey. It's going to take a while, but we both have said this was truly a gift. There was a presence about Zoe that other people even noticed. When Lewis was telling me his story that we recorded for the My Friend Lewis podcast, and he would get to those moments in his story that would just overwhelm him with trauma, Zoe would come from somewhere in the house. I don't even know how she knew. And she'd come running in and sit at his feet and just let him hold her and cry into her head. And if he was so emotive that he didn't see her, she would raise up her nose and bump him in the chin till he would look down and see her. And then he would just grab her. And so it wasn't just for Sarah. It was for all kinds of people. She was a very, very big heart and a very presence that seems to be beyond just being a dog. And I tell you what, she will be one of the big legacies of this family. She will live on in our hearts. And Sarah's hoping someday to get a big hug on that face yet again. So we'll see. And I told her I want to be there for that. I want to be there if you're going to see Zoe again. I want to see the moment.
Oh, God's got to pause that for a second.
You hope.
Yeah. She was an absolute delight and is going to be just a monumental gap, lost presence for sure.
Yep, there is a void in our home that's pretty vast at the moment. But I'm confident we will get beyond it, and there will be other gifts to hold Sarah's heart, whether it's in a canine form or me. I've got big shoes to fill, me and Mandy.
You do have big shoes to fill. It's interesting. I'm just thinking about grief, though, and it's interesting that I think the greater the gift that the person or the thing has been in our life, I think the greater the extent of the grief as well. I was just having a conversation with a person the other day about that, and then we were talking about grief, and that just stood out to me that relationships that have that deep, meaningful impact in our world, that are those incredible blessings, that the absence of them or the loss of them, man, the grief of that, the loss of that presence is that much more acute, much more apparent. And so it's hard when somebody's an incredible gift and then you lose them and you also feel the incredible grief at the same time.
You do. And yet, as with everything, God will fill in that void in other ways. And so we're confident that that will happen. It's going to take some time. This is not going to be quick. Sarah and I are really good at sitting in our pain and sitting in our sorrow and inviting Jesus into that with us and just holding us and letting the grief change to gratefulness. It's a great way to say it. So what about you? You got a best thing you heard this week?
Yeah, mine is interesting. It was a bit of a challenge to me. Like, it was a heart check for me. It came from a podcast called The Impossible Life. And the quote is, complacency will say to you, you are as sharp as ever when you used to be sharp. Complacency will have you living on past victories. That was an interesting space. I had to just kind of check myself a little bit on that, because I think at times, like to continue to stay present, to continue to stay active, to continue to move forward versus looking back on times that I've had before with the Father or relationships that I've had in the past and saying, oh yeah, like look at how good I was during those things, or look how sharp I was during that time. And it's like, well, yes, but I have to continue to, like, I can't become complacent. I can't become lazy or lackadaisical in my pursuit of the Father heart, in my pursuit of people around me or close to me or in the relationships that are around me. It was just a good heart check to be intentional, a reminder to be intentional.
Oh, that's good. My goodness. I even think about that in terms of leaning into retirement, if I ever do. When is that complacency? And when is it okay to say, man, I've put my best stuff in the world and maybe I just need to take a break? I think about that, trying to put the finishing touches on Just Love these days, going, do I really want to go down this road again and try and figure all that out?
I mean, what does that look like from your lens? I know this is a little bit of a tangent, but what does that look like from your lens in life? As you're older than I am, you are looking at life through a different lens than I am. What does it look like to look at life through that perspective of the what most people would perceive as the retirement age, or the golden years, that type of thing? What does it look like to look at life through that lens?
Yeah, and about half the Christians I know talk about Christians are never allowed to retire. They just got to keep being fruitful for Jesus to the end. And so I get it from both sides. I've got some friends that are really just enjoying life together. And I I think they seemingly enjoy what they're getting to do as a couple together. The last 3 years have been my biggest priority has been hanging out with Sarah and being whatever she needs through this trauma restoration that's going on. And that still continues. So we're involved in that. And then I smashed whatever writing around that. I've done very little travel other than the RV travel we've done, though I'm going to Atlanta and Greenville early next month to help with X2x2 folks. But I don't really know. I'm really down to living one day at a time. God, what do you have for me today? It's to work on this book, do this podcast, talk to these people, spend the day with Sarah. What is it that you have for me? And I am trying to slow down a little bit. I'm not as driven to get everything done I'd like to get done. I just trust in God for the space to do it. But I don't really know. I don't know if Sarah and I had this discussion in the RV. Is it really time for me, just you and me, to be together in this season of your life so that you find the fullness of your joy? If that's what God has for me right now, I think of Henry Nouwen, who gave up all his authoring and speaking and all that stuff just to care for one person at a center where a guy needed round the clock care. And he just gave himself to that and took himself out of the public eye. And I've thought about that. I've thought this Just Love book we're trying to get done, I think that's valuable to put into the world. So I'll probably do that. What's beyond that? I have no idea. It's going to be an everyday kind of Jesus, show me. I'm willing to do whatever, but I'm also willing to rest. I'm also willing to just enjoy, which may be complacency, enjoy the things I've put in the world and the conversations that allows me to have with people. And I don't know. We'll see. I'm Wayne Jacobson, by the way.
And I'm Kyle Rice.
And welcome to this episode of The God Journey.
Quick side note. There was a individual that listens to The God Journey that reached out to me about potentially hosting a retreat in Canada, in the Vancouver area. And I cannot find that email. I have been searching and searching for his email and trying to be able to contact him and follow up with him. And I cannot find that email. So just putting that out there to who, if they're still listening to The God Journey, like I'm wanting to contact you if that is you, but I cannot find your email to save my life. So I am sorry for that.
So did you get your No King shirt on this weekend and go out and pick it in Sheridan or something?
I did not, no. It's interesting watching again the tension between the No Kings protest stuff that's going on and the heart that's behind it, and then watching Trump and some of the MAGA response to the No King conversations. And it's such an interesting dialogue to watch Trump responds like, great, there was no kings that were that obtained rulership in the United States, and I'm just your president, and thank you, and we made it through. And I mean, just all these different tweets that he was putting out or comments he was putting out. I have very much both in my social circles of people who were all over the country that were a part of the No King rallies. And then there was a lot of people that were not and were criticizing them in some pretty harsh ways.
Yeah, I've got that pool of friendships too on both sides of the divide here. But I tell you, we didn't participate in anything like that just because I don't want to identify with the left any more than I want to identify with the right. Mm-hmm. And there's a whole lot of stuff in the No Kings protest that I've been going, that's not where I am on this journey.
Yeah.
But I am concerned when you've got 7 million Americans estimate worldwide coming out to protest a president that's never been done before. And all that's put on the hatred of the left and Antifa. And, you know, that's how the administration, that's how the Speaker of the House sees it. It's just all extremists. And the people we know doing it are not extremists. They're not ultra left. They're people that are concerned that the authority of the presidency is getting out of hand and that there's too much going on with Supreme Court justifying that. Yeah, I mean, I think there's things going on in the Trump administration that are very concerning in terms of how much authority is being vested in the whim of one man and his willingness to leverage the economic power and military might of this country for his own whim. He doesn't have advisors. He has sycophants. He doesn't have people around him who see the world differently and try and find a more reasoned approach to these things, because he just wants to do whatever he wants to do on his own. Yeah. And it bothers me that many of my Christian friends are just thrilled with that. They're so excited. Just even when you try and pin them down on some of what's going on and say, well, are you saying he's worse than Kamala Harris would have been? But you cannot think binary. Not at this point. He's president. Yeah. What you've got to do if you're a supporter of that is begin to try to help mitigate some of the damage he's trying to do, because you certainly don't want a Democratic president having the power that President Trump has usurped for himself.
If this is the trend of our presidents back and forth, whether they're on the left or on the right, it is going to shatter our nation, because it is just going to keep going back and forth in such intensity. I don't think that the nation can handle the strain anymore if it keeps going back and forth in the way that, especially with what this current presidency has done in regards to power and in regards, I mean, the executive orders, and I mean, just the there's no process of, I'm going to make this into law. I'm going to put, and he has Congress and Senate. Like, he has both of them. And so, like, he has the majority in both and still not putting things through law or going through the due process. And it makes, it's very concerning, no matter who you are, that if you have people who challenge you or give you a different worldview and you fire them, or fire them and then bring legal charges against them for voicing their opinion, man, that is concerning. Because then it's like, how can you serve the people as a whole, again, no matter who you are, and then no matter what area of leadership you're in, if you don't have people that are around you that challenge you and that have different perspectives and have different worldviews, then your ability to serve in a holistic way, in a wholehearted way, is going to be drastically impeded.
Yeah, and he rules by intimidation. And even in his own party, which, yeah, you know, people don't fully support him, but to not support him is to lose your future, I guess, in the Republican Party. So everybody kowtows to the party line. I read an article last week that I thought was really interesting, trying to describe why MAGA Christians seem so unchristian, which is an interesting premise, but it's one that I share. He said, the gap between Christian teachings and MAGA politics is baffling. How can people profess faith in Jesus, who preach love, mercy, and care for the oppressed, while supporting policies that punish immigrants, demonize LGBTQ people, and glorify cruelty? That's a very provocative question. And the way this article answered it, and we'll link it up in the notes, look at the difference between, I guess some woman has coined this phrase about vertical morality. Morality that comes from a superior being who dictates the way life's going to be. And then if you don't do it, you get punished for not doing it in drastic ways. Yeah. And horizontal morality, which is to do justice, to love mercy, to walk humbly with our God. It's the way we treat people around us. Yeah. And Jesus seemed to be very focused much more on the horizontal sense of morality than he was the vertical sense. But what this article pointed out, what I agree with, is why do so many Christians really like Trump, even though he's excessive in ways you think would turn their stomach, because it does mine? It's because they see God that way. They see God as ruling from above. This is the line. Morality is the law. Follow it or be punished. And that's why they don't see a disconnect between that and loving your neighbor or loving your enemies, as Jesus asked us to do. There's no love lost in the whole immigrant thing. I love that Trump has closed the border. I love that. Even Lewis loves that. You got to have that. At the same time, he's getting rid of criminal immigrants, gang members, people from other countries who've come here to do harm. I'm all supportive of that. What I'm not supportive of is taking people who've lived here 30, 40 years, been law-abiding, tax-paying citizens. We've used their labor, we've taken their taxes, and we're doing nothing to make them legal here.
Yeah.
I saw a quote from somebody that I know really well on a thing, just talking about some 20-year immigrant who was deported and said, we had 20 years to make it legal. I'm going, you have no idea. It's impossible in the climate we're in to help people like Lewis. We've hired some of the best immigration attorneys in the states to try and find a way for him to be legal here. And there is no door open to that process. It's go home. And that was before. This is before Trump was in power. It's not easy. And I think we do owe, in a matter of compassion and love, people who've been here long term, who have obeyed the laws, paid their taxes, been part, haven't drawn off the public dole. There's ways we could, in respect for their work, whatever, find a path to make them legal here, to at least give them a green card.
Well, and I mean, that's the thing, is it's like they have been existing. They've been demonstrating consistently that they are a productive member of our culture and our society. And so why would you not, especially if they've demonstrated a continuous history of that? It just is baffling to me. It doesn't make sense why you wouldn't want people like, for example, why you wouldn't want to be able to create a clear pathway for someone like Lewis to be able to be a citizen or a permanent resident of the United States. I mean, it's baffling. It's absolutely baffling.
It is. And the director of ICE says it's because they jumped in line against all these people who tried to stay in line and do it right. And because they jumped the line, they need to go back and get back in line and try and find their way in again. But what it misses to me is these people have been here for a long time. They've been hired by Republicans and Democrats to do all kinds of things. And they're kind of a wink, wink, nod, nod. We don't want more people coming, but we're going to use these because their labor is cheaper and their willingness to work hard is there. Now it's time for us, out of compassion and love for people who've been part of our culture for a long time, to find a path to legality for them. And I think the absence of that, instead terrorizing that community with threats and ICE raids and masked gunmen and all the things that go on to try to terrorize, I think that's a big part of the Trump plan, whether it's terrorizing people who were in the legal profession and concerned about laws you broke. Now you're trying to make up things to find them guilty of stuff, as he just says, flat out vengeance. They did it to me. I'm doing it to them. Is that the kind of leader we want, really?
Yeah. So the article for me was very, very challenging because I grew up very much in a vertical morality perspective. I mean, that was absolutely what was taught. And then that's also how a good Christian family is supposed to be led. You know, so whether it be me looking to be a husband or me being a child and going through some of those experiences, is like, no, this is how it's supposed to be led. This is how it's supposed to be done, because this is the first and foremost, this is the example that God laid down for us. And man, it's like, how did it get so twisted and distorted from the teaching in the life of Christ? Because one of the things that the article pointed out was that the modern church is leaning more into the Old Testament and to the teachings of Paul than it is to the life and teachings of Jesus. That there's a lot more that's being reflected from those teachings than there is from the life and the teachings of Jesus. And that, again, to me, it's like, okay, I see Jesus's life as being more in the horizontal plane as described in this article than the vertical plane. And yet it's like, okay, if that is supposedly the author and the perfecter of our faith, then how has it become so twisted? How has it become this thing where it goes on to say that furthering the will of God, no matter what and no matter who it harms, that we are going to follow this case of morality no matter what it happens, and that we have a duty to please God through our strict adherence to the vertical morality.
Yeah, and she goes on to say, it becomes dangerous when Christians weaponize this vertical morality for power, which is exactly what we're seeing now in the Christian nationalism.
Yeah.
And Jesus was, you know, his whole thing about the sheep and the goats. When did we see you hungry, naked, or poor? And we didn't. Jesus was talking about that idea of living justly. And I know she doesn't talk about this here, but when I look at the book that Toby and I are working on, this is right here. The whole morality, vengeful God to Jesus saying, no, this God loves you. And if you'll participate in his love, you will love others. And then there's a way to care for the immigrant, the widow, the people among you who are hurting and broken, instead of using power to marginalize them, to terrorize them, and to make them either conform or be punished deeply. And I tell you, there's a lot of people who see that in God. That's the God they serve. And so I think they've missed it. I think they've missed the new covenant of love, which isn't lawless. It's not let everybody get away with everything, but it's to deal with situations in your culture with compassion and kindness and justice, and not compromise justice for your own personal benefit.
And that is a tension that I'm still trying to sort out personally. Because on one end of the spectrum, I see a lot of conversation being like, okay, first and foremost, may they be known by their love for others. And then they define love as basically the free for all that you described, where people can choose to do whatever they want to do and there are no consequences. It doesn't matter. As long as their choices are not directly influencing my world and my experience, then it doesn't matter. Because I love you. And so they will know them by their love. And so seeing that end of the spectrum, and then the other end of the spectrum, which is this very strict vertical morality, harsh, vengeful God code. And for me, it's like, okay, Lord, where are you at in the middle of that? Because I do believe that first and foremost, God's approach and perspective to his beloved is love. But in the midst of that, where does right and wrong come in? Where does justice come in that space, in that conversation, when we have a very pluralistic, very open worldview, which has saturated the United States, where it's like, okay, it's all relative. It's all about you. It's all, you know, there's that whole perspective. And so where does that come in? Where the tension between the holiness and the morality of God and his unrelenting, passionate love?
I don't think it's that difficult to find the line there, because love always brings with it truth. Truth always brings with it transformation and change and life, but it comes through love. It's more the modality. The approach now is we're going to do it through law, which is what Israel tried. It's what God did with Israel. And what we're demonstrating is it doesn't work to impose laws about things that are not hurting another human being. It may not be what we would choose. It may not be what we think God loves or wants, but God still loves the person. And only by loving them do we have the hope of God accessing their heart and then doing the transformation from the inside. So the real choice is, do we impose it on the outside, or do we provide the environment in which transformation happens from the inside? And that's what love does. Love allows us not to be relativistic and doesn't matter what you do, everything's fair, love and war. There are ways God wants us to live. Yeah. But the only way we can do that is if we learn to live loved by him. And the imposition of law always produces the opposite. It produces rebellion. It produces all. And then when people rebel, that's even more an excuse to clamp down even harder, because we've got to conform you to what God wants of you. And I talked to somebody years ago about this whole idea of trying to put the Moses codes into the law of the United States of America, because the nation who honors God, you know, he'll bless. And so the whole idea was how we do that. And I looked at him, I said, so you're a lawman. And he got really offended. I said, you think change can be brought by law? And I think change can only be brought through love. Mm-hmm. And until people are loved at their most broken and allowed truth to access then where it is that they might find the wholeness of life to live in, then they're not going to find it. Because when you go to war, because I'm going to defend my way to live against your ability to try and take it away, it doesn't lead to good things. It leads to a very harmful way for society to work together.
So where do loving, especially thinking through a parenting perspective, where do loving boundaries come in? Because, I mean, again, for my daughters, I want them to learn what it means to live wholeheartedly as who God's created them to be. That's my desire, is to see them grow into the incredible women that God has designed them to be. And yet, as I'm navigating that, there's still that first, I guess maybe I'm answering my own question here, because first and foremost, I want them to know that they are delighted in, that they are loved by me, and that first and foremost, no matter what they do, they are still Jess and I's daughters. They are still deeply loved by us. That does not change. And so that's the foundation that I want them to learn from. But then from that space, from that foundation, there is correction, there is direction, there is boundaries that are put into play. And I'm largely just brainstorming out loud right now, because these are just things that I'm thinking about on a regular basis when it comes to what does it look like to parent with intentionality and with love and with passion, but also, man, like when some of the worldviews that are being thrown at my daughters are coming at them, I also stand in the way of those and like, no, that's not, we're not going there. We're not getting into that right now, man, especially with some of the content that is in media for children these days, or some of the teaching stuff, or some of the books that Jess and I have even had to screen some of the books that we're getting from the public library, because some of the content is not in alignment with what we feel like is the father heart of God. And so, yeah, it's just interesting.
We did that with our kids as they work through stuff, be able to say, okay, that's what the world is saying.
Yeah.
But that's not what God says. Here's what God says leads to a healthy, wholehearted life. And you continue to make those distinctions for kids. The idea is not that they won't be exposed to it, and not that they won't see it in the culture, but make a clear distinction between the way God thinks and the way humanity sometimes tries to have their own way, which is why Scripture says we're in rebellion against God for the most part, until we come to rest in Him and His love. So I don't think there's anything wrong with having boundaries and saying, okay, this is our family ethic, this is not. But when it's just authoritarian, when there's no love behind it, when it's just, I'm the dad, that's why, and you make the rules and you met out harsh punishments, and your kids get the idea you're just a vengeful, angry old man, it doesn't endear them to your point of view. It actually alienates them from it.
The challenge is, though, at least a lot of what I have seen in my earlier days was that is love, that is the expression of love, is being that intense, hard, you know, very rule driven, behavior focused, that is love, that is at times it is very tough love, but that is the most loving thing that I can do for you. And then it's like, really? Because that feels more abusive than it feels loving.
Yeah, I think when you get to the point of having to make people conform out of power, you've lost the conversation. Mm. It's got to be that endearment of heart that gives a desire for a child or whatever to live more wholeheartedly. Now, you've got to have laws against stealing and kidnapping and all those kinds of things. I'm not even talking about those things. There's major things that you just are wrong. We don't do them. There's punishment that's brought to people who do that stuff.
Yeah.
But for most of what we're talking about, people either learn, do I live a self-indulgent lifestyle, or do I live an others-focused life, aware not only of my needs, but I'm also aware of the needs of others around me. And I'm looking for things that are just and compassionate and kind, and not vengeful and retributive and trying to hurt other people who hurt me. That's what the whole history of humanity has been. The stronger push their will on top of the weaker. And that's happening again. And you think we were past that at some point? We're going to see things differently. We're going to be kind and compassionate. We're going to try to find that road between what we need a law for and what we don't need a law for, and allow some freedom among people, because that's the environment in which people can most come alive in Jesus.
Yeah.
And if we don't provide that, if it's just the vengeful, angry, top-down stuff, and unfortunately, I was listening to a Walter Brueggemann speech. He gave it 5 years ago at Fuller Theological Seminary. And he talks about justice from above. He's talking about two things, justice from above, which is here's the right way. We're going to force you to do it. Even from God doing it that way tends to be predatory. So elites can maintain their privilege. It's always to maintain order, but justice is imposed from above, has to be contradicted by justice that rises from below, from the neighborly kindness of the human heart. And that the Old Testament is filled with this predatory justice of here's what's right and here's what's wrong and stone them, burn them, whatever. And Jesus comes and he talks about something entirely differently. He talks about the justice that rises from the human heart when they learn to love one another as you've been loved, and not just people who agree with you. This is, I think, what so many MAGA Christians omit is I can hate the immigrant. I can hate the Democratic person who disagrees with me. I can hate those people and have them punished and have people, you know, drawn up ridiculous charges to somehow make up for what happened to Donald Trump, and are supportive of that because it's a fight from, you know, it's a fight and we've got the power now. So yeah, let's take all we can get, instead of when you have the power, that's the time to be generous. It's the time to be kind and compassionate and to win hearts. Even Trump's approval rating is down to the low 40% these days. He doesn't even have most of the country behind him. And yet, doggone it, he's going to keep pushing for it. And the arrogance of Christians who back him, it's just wanting to crush the opposition. And it's going to bode poorly for the future of the United States. He says the predatory practice of injustice is anxiety about scarcity, accumulation, monopoly, and it always ends in violence. And the transformative alternative of justice from below is crying out at injustice and living in a different reality of neighborly love. And to me, that strikes right to the heart of this justice righteousness book that we're working on. If we hadn't had righteousness in the scriptures where we had it, if it had been justice there all along and God's kind of justice, not punitive justice, not trying to work top down, but trying to work from inside the heart and a society in which people can love and care for each other. But now we're moving so far from that. And I hope there's still time for people who claim to have an engagement with the love of Christ. I hope there's time for them to step back a little bit and realize that what you're backing is doing irreparable harm to our country.
I mean, I think that his thoughts and his feedback is incredibly insightful. And this was 5 years ago. This wasn't even in the context of the current age that we're living in, which is intriguing to me. Honestly, it just continues to give my heart pause, because it's like, Lord, humanity apart from you, it just continues to move in this space that is so incredibly destructive that moves to seek its own personal gain and focuses on scarcity and focuses on fear and looks to seek and gain power. And it's like, gosh, Lord. Again, honestly, there's that heart cry of Father, anytime now, we're good. Like anytime would be great, because we were just talking about this the other day in one of my classes, and we were talking about this idea of like, okay, what would it look like to be able to create a middle ground party, a third party that was able to say, okay, we've had enough of this ping pong effect of one person, one side getting the control and the power, and then the other one moving to the farther end of the spectrum. And the ping pong just keeps moving farther and farther and farther and farther apart. And it's like, okay, Lord, what would it look like for you to bridge that gap, to find restoration? We were talking about even the difference between 9/11 and COVID and the unifying factor. And one of my students said that they believed that 9/11 was the last unifying event that the United States has seen. that COVID was not unifying, that actually just highlighted the polarization and the division that was already taking place in the country. And so it was very intriguing just to say, okay, Lord, if you are the person who does bring unity and peace to a place and to a culture, what does it look like for your kingdom to prevail in this space? What does it look like for us to move from your victory to your victory, not in a man's perspective of gaining more power and then utilizing that power for own personal gain, but what does it look like for your kingdom's victory to move from victory to victory in our current day and age?
Yeah, and it's probably not going to be easily answered from the 30,000 foot level and trying to figure out what are we going to do with countries and the political environment of the U.S. and all that stuff. What I think this gives hope to is down to how I live my life today. And am I learning to live in justice and kindness and speak up for the marginalized and the hurting and the people who are being taken advantage of just in the interest of consolidating power to one political entity in the U.S.? And that's, as someone said to me, he was talking about their own situation in marriage and said, you can't solve this argument from the 30,000 foot. You can't win the argument there, but you can't lose it in the heart-to-heart loving another human being. And I think that's where I'm encouraged. I think we're in a pre-redemptive time where God can take the chaos of what's going on and how empty it's going to be, even when people think they've succeeded. See, what the problem with all this is, people can be belligerent, arrogant, vengeful, and angry, thinking they're doing God's business. And that's because in their own heart, they're responding to fear instead of love, instead of what Jesus wanted us to be was a contradiction to the world around us. Not, oh, we're just more of the same. We're going to grab the power on our side to do to you what you've done to us. It's not that, but we would live in love and live as a contradiction to the way the world works. And if we lived as a contradiction, that's how the light would shine into the darkness. That's how people would say, huh, I wonder why he's not up in arms over this, why he's not doing that, or she. It gives people pause when people don't respond out of selfishness, but respond out of a higher plane of love and self-sacrifice and concern for others around them, especially those they disagree with.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com